Midlands today with Tullamore Motors Renault. The Renault Clio is irresistible. Your 231 model is available for order today at tullamoremotors.ie. Midlands today with Lindsay Dolan on Midlands 103.
A very good morning and welcome on into the show. Coming up today, over 20,000 people in Ireland are suffering with the long COVID. We're going to speak to an Offaly native who's going through it. We're getting the latest update on the murder of the Westmeath psychic Stephen Posier. And Frank Graney, our courts correspondent, is bringing us up to date on the Castlebar teacher Enoch Burke, who is suspended from Wilson's Hospital School in County Westmeath and has been in prison since September. You can get in touch with us, text or WhatsApp us now on 083 3010 103 with your views, or if you fancy it, give us a call on 0818 300 103. We are going to get stuck into the morning papers and see what's making news around the world at this time of the year. Now, the Irish Independent tell us the number of Irish millionaires grows as 12% of households have a net wealth of over 1 million or even more. I don't. Now, the number of Irish millionaires in Ireland jumped by 2.5 times in the last 8 years as soaring property prices and shrinking debts has made Ireland's wealthy richer than ever. Approximately 223,000 households, or even 12% of the total in the country, have a net wealth of 1 million or more, meaning the value of what they own minus what they owe makes them paper millionaires, according to central bank data. Now, this is a huge jump from 2013, when only 87,000 households, or 5% of the total, met the qualification. The central bank said the explosion in wealthy households since partially reflects the overall gains in household wealth across all income groups in recent years as employment grew and house values increased and savings soared. However, an analysis by the central bank economist also found that the richest households accounted for almost all of the growth in asset values over the period, especially the top 10%. The wealth of that cohort not just comes from the value of their homes, but also business, wealth and financial investments, whereas the gains in the bottom 50% of earners came largely from deleveraging or even paying down debts. Full story is in the Irish Independent this morning. Now, the Irish Independent also tell us that the cancer class divide leading to later diagnosis in emergency departments, the lower socio-economic groups overrepresented in those with later cancer symptoms. A cancer class divide is leaving some groups more likely to be only diagnosed when they present at a hospital emergency department with advanced disease, according to a new report today. People from lower socioeconomic groups are overly representative amongst those who turn up in emergency departments with later cancer symptoms and also on waiting lists for specialist services. The gap is outlined in the report, Understanding the Challenges of Cancer and Socioeconomic Inequality in Ireland, by TOSC, the Independent Economic and Social Think Tank. It said that the differences in economic and social circumstances determine the impact of cancer for many patients, including both the incidence and the outcome for certain cancer types. Social inequality affects patients all the way from pre-diagnosis to post-treatment. According to the report, it involved interviews with healthcare professionals, community health workers, oncology experts and representatives of charity organisations. It also highlighted various barriers, including delays in accessing primary care services, fewer GPs in deprived areas, and also the direct and indirect financial cost of treatment, such as transport and the loss of income. Full story in The Independent. Turning our attention to the Irish Times, objections made to a 100 million planned expansion to the Centre Park's Longford Forest Resort are based on a lack of proper infrastructure in the local area, according to those who have appealed to Longford County Council's decision to grant planning permission. Plans for 198 new lodges, external saunas and pods, a new lakeside restaurant and coffee shop and extension of existing facilities were put on hold in recent weeks. following a number of appeals to onboard Planola. One such objection by Richard Hayton of Newcastle House, which is situated on the perimeter of the Ballymahon Resort, states that Centre Parks has already created total destruction of the once 160-acre forest, which was part of the Newcastle House estate. He stated that further construction within the forest would have significant environmental effects. Full story in the Irish Times. Now, the journal, journal.ie, said at least 15,000 people killed by hot weather in Europe in 2022, according to the World Health Organization. The 3 months from June to August were the hottest in Europe since records began. And you know what? When you look at the temperatures today, I think we're still in double digits as it is. At least 15,000 people have died in Europe because of hot weather this year so far. Spain, Germany, amongst the worst affected countries. The 3 months from June to August were the hottest in Europe since records began. And exceptionally high temperatures led to the worst drought the continent has witnessed since the Middle Ages. Based on country data submitted so far, it's estimated that at least 15,000 people specifically died due to the heat in 2022, the WHO's regional director for Europe, Hans Klug, said in a statement. Almost 4,000 deaths in Spain, more than 1,000 in Portugal, more than 3,200 in the United Kingdom, and about 4,500 deaths in Germany were reported by health authorities during the 5 months of summer, he said. It's estimated to increase as more countries report on excess death due to heat. He said it's highlighting the UN climate summit in Egypt and it's calling for a rapid action. And of course, COP27 is happening as we speak and lots coming out of it too. Okay, journal.ie says Biden and Trump clashed on the eve of the US midterm election as more than 40 million early ballots are cast. Republicans and Democrats have traded final blows today ahead of the midterm elections that could upend Joe Biden's presidency, weaken Western support for Ukraine, and even open the door for a comeback bid by Donald Trump. More than 40 million ballots have been cast through early voting options, meaning the outcome was already taking shape before polls open nationwide tomorrow. It's going to be really interesting to watch what happens here. Joe Biden acknowledged that Democrats face an uphill battle to regain control of Congress, telling supporters that if we're able to hold on, we're going to be in an incredible shape. Oh, I don't know. I know that sounds like a very high expectation, he said, adding that we're up against some of the darkest forces we've seen in our history. Biden, who has framed his closing argument as a warning that American democracy is online, was set to close out days of campaigning for Democratic candidates at a rally this evening near Baltimore. That is going to be a very, very interesting one to watch stateside. I think Trump is going to make a huge announcement, and I think his huge announcement is that he's going to run for presidency in 2 years' time. Now, the Irish Independent say over 100,000 staff and patients are to be contacted by the HSE after data was accessed in a cyber attack. Around 94,000 patients and 18,200 members of staff whose information was illegally accessed and copied, assessed during the May 2021 cyber attack on the HSE will be contacted over the coming months. Of the 113,000 people being notified, 86% relate to patient data and 14% to staff files. The HSE said yesterday it anticipates that everybody will be notified by April next year at the very latest. It follows the ransomware attack by Russian criminals on the HSE computer systems in May 2021. I'd still like to know how they got their head around this, because I don't think there's been any official outcome of how the records were all reinstated and things like that. It's going to be another interesting one to watch because I'm dying to know. They said that they didn't pay a ransom, yet everything seems to have come back together quite nicely. The journal.ie says the Lord Mayor Mansion House will have a crib this Christmas, but it will not include live animals. Dublin's Lord Mayor has said there will be a crib at the Mansion House this Christmas, but it will not include live animals. Addressing a meeting of Dublin City Council yesterday evening, Caroline Conroy said there will be a Christmas sleigh and children's choirs alongside the crib, but said her position is not changing and there will be no live animals. She said she'd like to reassure people that while they are aiming to do is make the experience better this Christmas, there will be a crib at the Mansion House. The only difference is there will not be live animals. But what is exciting is that there will be more than just a crib. So what's more than just a crib? She also said that some reports saying at the people were given out saying that, you know, animals were being mistreated, and they weren't being mistreated, apparently. Fine Gael put forward an emergency motion yesterday evening at the council meeting calling for the crib to be reinstated. And of course, we know that the live crib has been outside the Mansion House on Dawson Street since 1995. Now, it might not mean an awful lot to us down here, but for children in inner city Dublin, it would mean quite a bit to them because they don't get the chance to see live animals the way they're second nature to us down here. Like, some children believe that eggs come from a supermarket, not from a hen. Now, the man who killed John Lennon has told a parole board he knew that the act was evil and wrong, but he wanted the fame far too much. Mark Chapman shot the Beatles star in New York back in 1980. He said he was willing to give everything and anything to take a human life. He has been denied parole for the 12th time. New research shows more bass in music really does encourage people to dance more. Neuroscientists in Canada have found those attending gigs move more to very low frequencies, even though they are not consciously detectable. Oh, yeah, I know. I love deep bass in music, especially when I have it on loud in the car. Scientists say when the VLF sound was introduced during a live electronic music gig, gig-goers moved even more than they could because they just liked that boom, boom, boom that was going on in the background. The actor Chris Evans has been named the People magazine Sexiest Man Alive. The Captain America star takes the baton from another Avenger, Paul Rudd, who earned the title last year. Chris told the publication his mother will be so happy, but that he expects some good-natured teasing from his close friends. Who's the Irish Sexiest Man Alive? Would you have an Irish man in your mind and you'd say, yeah, he's the Irish Sexiest Man? Let me know your thoughts on that. Text or WhatsApp is 083 3010 103. And today is National Cappuccino Day. The first cappuccino is said to have been made by an Italian monk in 1683 after the Battle of Vienna. However, it did not appear on a cafe menu until the 1930s. That said, off you go and have a coffee. Now, if you've got a bit of a sweet tooth, we've got a competition for you. You can head over to Midlands 103 Facebook or even Instagram page, where with thanks to the great team at a Sugar Plum Sweetery, you could be the winner of a €100 gift voucher or one of our three runner-ups that will take home a brand new Toy Show treat box. Just head over to our socials for your chance to win. And I wish you all the very best of luck with that. OK, now, as you will have heard on yesterday's show, 21,000 people in Ireland are suffering with long COVID. The condition causes fatigue, brain fog and respiratory issues. One woman who knows what it's like is Offaly's Rose Mannion. Now, she was one of the first people to get the virus and ended up in ICU for 81 days back in 2020. She's been speaking with Midlands 103 Chloe Farrell about her experience and living with long COVID, and she says she knows she was lucky to survive.
I got COVID. I was one of the first people to get severe COVID back in March 2020, the end of March. And I didn't know I had it. I was very ill, but I had no idea that I had COVID. And I ended up in ICU in Portiuncula Hospital in Bannisloe. And I spent a total of 19 weeks altogether between Bannisloe and University College Hospital in Galway, and then I had to have a rehab in the Intermediate Care Centre in Limerick. And I went into hospital on the 28th of March and I came home on the 8th of August. So it was a long spell. But I came out the right side, thank God, and I'm thankful that I did come out the right side. A lot of people didn't, but I was just one of the fortunate ones, I suppose.
How are you now after having COVID?
I've been left with two badly damaged lungs, is how the consultant describes it as. They are badly damaged, and they tell me that their challenge is, and I suppose it's my challenge too, is that they need to keep the lungs stable rather than let them deteriorate any worse. They certainly won't get any better. They have told me that it's permanent damage. And I get shortness of breath from that, and I do get tired and fatigued. And anyone who knows me knows that I was always a very active person. And this has definitely put a sort of a little bit of a halt to my gallop, if you like. I still want to be active, like the mind is telling me to do this and do that and go here and go there. But the body and the breathing is saying to me, oops, you know, maybe you shouldn't do that because there'll be consequences. And I know myself I can't do the things that I would love to do. So that's where I am. But look, I'm not on oxygen, you know, and I'm thankful that I'm not. I'm able to go without it. But I do have to pace myself a lot more than what I ever did.
And just with the mention of stabilising your lungs, what's involved in ensuring that they don't get worse?
Well, I can't, if I get too many infections, for example, and I do pick up infections a lot quicker and a lot more easier than what I did in the past. I know I'm an asthmatic anyhow, so I would always, you know, be, as I say, conscious of winter coming around because I'd pick up things. But you take August gone by, lovely month of August. It was actually very warm weather. And I came down with a horrible flu. And I mean a horrible flu. It was a full-blown bad flu. And it really flattened me. It was so bad. And it left me with a horrible cough. And after three lots of steroids and a dose of antibiotics, I still have to cough. Going forward. But again, it's something that I'm told, my GP has told me that unfortunately these are things I'll have to put up with. It's just to be careful not to get infection.
Have you had COVID since?
No, I haven't had, no. But I've had the symptoms of COVID. I tested negative every time I tested. I was testing negative. But that flu that I got in August was COVID-like symptoms. But yet I was testing negative.
Coming into winter, is there any kind of extra precautions you'll have to take if you're a bit more prone to infection?
I suppose for myself, thinking about it, wearing a mask would be probably one of the bigger. And I have to say I'm very bad to do it. But I do wear a mask when I'm in a crowd. I'd be very conscious of people around me. When I'm in crowds, I'm very, very conscious compared to, I was never like that before. But now I'm nervous and I'm on edge when I'm in a crowd, and I'd be wearing a mask. I wouldn't go on a bus or I wouldn't go on a train now where there's people around me without a mask.
Do you feel that there's certain things that you're just avoiding completely now or that you can't do anymore?
I'd be more conscious of, as again, going back to crowds. I'd be very conscious of crowds now. Like, we do go to concerts, we do go back out, but we're not going as much as what we used to. Again, I'd be analysing where I'm going and thinking about it.
Does it get in the way of your daily life much?
Well, I suppose getting in the way of my daily life, It has curtailed me. Yes, it would have. I have, I'm not as active as what I was. I do a bit of walking. Again, not as much as what I used to do, probably because I'd be more out of breath. I do get more fatigued, that's for sure. But then on the other hand, I'm 2.5 years older, so maybe that's an aging process. I don't know. But I do know that the shortness of breath is my number one problem from COVID, and that's back to the lung damage.
Is there anything that kind of puts it at ease?
Well, rest. I just have to pace myself and I have to be rest. Pre-COVID, I could stay on my feet all day. I could go anywhere. I could do anything. And I'd rarely be tired, go down to bed at night, fall asleep, be up the next day, full of energy. And people used to say to me, you know, I envy your levels of energy. Where do you get it from? But they're not saying that anymore because I don't have that anymore. You know, so that's just rest, I suppose, is the answer. And I don't like resting. I like to be on the feet. I like to stay going. I like to be active. And I find that difficult at times to come to terms with.
We wish Rose all the very, very best and many thanks to Chloe Farrell there as well. Okay, get in touch with us, text or WhatsApp us on 083 3010 103 or give us a call on 0818 300 103. It's Lindsay in for Will on Midlands today for the rest of the week. And I'm so glad to be here. Now, dumping innocent animals like rubbish is absolutely the worst type of behaviour. Offaly SPCA is making the comments after five little kittens. Who does this? Were dumped at the weekend. Now, the charity said they've had to close their doors for cats and kittens as they actually can't cope with the demand. Jane Lewis is the chairperson and volunteer and said they definitely need more fosterers.
These five kittens were found dumped in a bog in the Offaly area. They were in a sort of a plastic crate with another crate cable tied on top. We're not sure exactly how long they were in the box, but we presume definitely overnight because they were found in the early hours of the morning. It's not unusual. Unfortunately, we do see these things. We don't always publicise it. So they were found, as I say, and we have numerous kittens in our care that need help just like they do.
And Jane, what's happening with the kittens now? Did you rescue them?
Yes, of course. They're in our care at the moment. Now they have received veterinary treatment. They had to have flea doses, worm doses and just general vet checkup. They all appear to be happy now. They're eating well. A little bit stressed when they came in, which is quite normal. They're in our care at the minute. Now, unfortunately, they'll be the last kittens coming into our care. We have to shut the doors as from today. We just don't have any room for any more kittens to come in, unless people can offer to foster or to adopt.
Jane, would I be correct in saying that the situation at Offaly SPCA is fairly similar to most charities around the country, where because of COVID, people returned pets and animals, and now you've basically become full since the pandemic?
Yes. Yeah, we're totally inundated. We just have no room. Our fosterers are full. Our own homes are full. People are wonderful, and they do, you know, it's just that people aren't adopting. So what's happening is the foster homes that have the kittens aren't moving on to their new homes, so we just don't have the space.
Jane, can you tell me a bit about the kittens themselves? What are they like?
They're beautiful little kittens, as all kittens are. They're about 7 weeks. They are extremely friendly, so obviously had been handled, which makes it even sadder. But, you know, they did know some sort of handling. Their overall body condition wasn't bad, but they were very bad with fleas and worms. They were worm infested.
But that's been treated now?
Everything's been treated and they're doing great and they're happy, yeah.
So is Offaly SPCA putting out a call for fosters for these particular kittens, or is it for all animals that you have in your care at the
moment? All animals, yes. We have an awful lot in care. At the minute we have 67 cats and kittens in our care. Unfortunately, we've no calls looking for people to rehome the kittens. So we're calling out for people to please adopt, don't shop, you know, if they can come to us. take even a pair of kittens, it would really be wonderful. And if they can't adopt, maybe if they could foster for a few weeks, it would really help. Then we can take in more, help more.
Jane, when you're at capacity in a situation like this, how does this affect the organisation's ability to rescue more animals?
We just can't. You know, we've nowhere to put the animals. We've no shelter. So we depend completely on people, you know, foster homes, families taking in these kittens. So basically, as of today, regarding cats and kittens, we just cannot take in anymore. We have nowhere for them. Our own homes are full too. You know, the volunteers themselves have all taken in cats and kittens as well.
Jane, I see on your most recent Facebook post that three of the five kittens that were rescued the other day have now been taken by a woman.
They have gone to foster care with the woman. They're not ready to be rehomed yet. We have to assess them, you know, medically, make sure that sometimes, you know, you want to give them at least a week, 2 weeks of getting them litter trained, just making sure that they are all right, that nothing is, you know, ferment there, maybe like cat flu or anything like that. So we try and keep them for at least 2 to 3 weeks before we start looking for homes for them.
So you have two of these particular kittens left, but you're still at capacity with obviously the 67 others that you have in your care.
Yes. And unfortunately, already this morning, we're receiving numerous calls about cats and kittens, cats in, kitten, you know, just, it's just very, very bad.
Jane, how can people reach out to foster these animals?
They can either PM us on our page, which is Offaly SPCA, or they can contact our cat kitten phone on 086-0222-432.
Okay, that was Cameron Clark chatting to Jane Lewis, the chairperson of the Offaly SPCA. Such a sad story, those poor little kittens. And, you know, get on to Offaly SPCA if there's something you can do to help them out. Ireland's sexiest man, well, we're talking about the world's sexiest man alive, the actor Chris Evans, Captain America himself, has been named as the sexiest man alive. We've already got one vote in for our own Will. And Will Faulkner, yeah, easy on the eye, according to Mary in Mount Mellick. And Dathi O'Shea's got a vote as well. So we've got two so far. The vote is 50-50, if you like. It's Lindsay in for Will. Just tell us, who do you think is Ireland's sexiest man? 083 3010 103. Do you actually think that the actor Chris Evans is one of the sexiest men alive? Do you know, there's some very attractive men in the world. I don't know that he would be one of my top 10, put it that way. OK, we have plenty to come on the show today and we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call on 0818 300 103. Coming up after the news at 10 o'clock, Sinead Hubble is going to be joining us in studio to keep us up to date on the latest that's happening with the man who's been arrested, I suppose, all to do with the Westmeath-based psychic, Stephen Posier. We'll have the latest on that and our gardening slot as well. Okay, it is Midlands today. It's Lindsay in for Will, who's got his feet up at home and just chilling out and taking some me time. You can get in touch with us, text or WhatsApp us on 083 3010 103. Coming up on the show in this hour, well, there is lots to keep us company because we will have our gardening slot with Arthur O'Mara from O'Mara Gardening Centre in Mullingar. And I am really looking forward to this because there are leaves all over my back garden and I don't know, should I leave them there and let the nutrients from the leaves just sit on the grass and go into the grass so I'll have a lovely lawn next summer, or will I just sweep them all up? If you've any questions that you want to put in to Arthur, you can do so now on text or WhatsApp 083 3010 103. Okay, first, a man has been arrested yesterday on suspicion of murdering Stephen Posier, the 65-year-old man from Oh, well, look, the best person to talk to me about this is Sinead Hubble. Sinead, you have all the info on this and a very, very sad story. You know, the Westmeath-based psychic, Stephen Posier. What's the latest?
So a man in his 20s was arrested yesterday morning on suspicion of murder. He is still being detained at Mullingar Garda Station this morning and it's believed he can be held for up to 24 hours. Now, he was identified as a person of interest very early in this investigation and Gardaí are not looking for anybody else in connection with the death of the 65-year-old. It's believed that this man was known to Stefan and Gardaí say that their investigations are ongoing.
So remind us of the details of the case.
So on October 25th, which is just 2 weeks ago, Gardaí discovered the psychic's body and at the time it was described as unexplained circumstances. A post-mortem was carried out at the Midlands Regional Hospital in the days following the discovery and while the details have not been released for operational reasons, we do know that Stefan was violently assaulted and died as a result of his injuries. It's believed that he was found under a cover in his garden in his home in Rattan, which is near Kinnegad, and that there may have been an attempt to bury his body. Now, sources say that Stefan may have been in fear of his killer due to his erratic behaviour in the days before his murder, and that Gardaí are working on the theory that the suspect snapped after getting in a row with the victim. The suspect is believed to have fled from the scene and travelled to visit a relative in the southeast of the country, where he spoke to them about what happened, and that was how the alarm was actually raised.
So when will Stefan be laid to rest?
So Stefan's funeral actually took place in Carlow on Sunday morning. Now, the details of the funeral were kept very much under wraps. They weren't released until late Friday evening. But during the Mass, Father Pat Hughes did say that the family had been deeply moved by the level of support they have received from everybody in the local community.
So what do we know about Stefan?
So Stefan was originally from Belgium, but he'd been living in Westmeath for about 20 years and he was a very well-known psychic and medium in the area. And there's been many, many tributes to him since his death. And he's been described as a lovely man who wouldn't harm anyone.
Yeah, it's such a sad story, isn't it? Really
very,
is.
Very sad.
And a very quiet funeral to be held there on Sunday as well. So I suppose we're just going to have to wait and see what happens next.
Yes, so Gardaí will have to either bring further charges against this man or release him once the 24 hours is up. Now, they may be able to extend that in some circumstances. They can do that. But I was speaking to Gardaí there in the last couple of minutes and he's still in custody at the moment.
Yeah, so we know he was arrested yesterday morning. So we're already maybe coming up to the 24-hour stage.
Yeah, the 24 hours also don't include rest periods. So
That'd be overnight.
And it can depend on how long they're actually questioning for them. So, yeah, it's not just the normal 24 hours.
Okay. Sinead, thank you very much for joining us.
Great, thank you.
Okay, get in touch with us. Text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103. Or if you fancy it, you can give us a call. And we'll take your we'll answer it 0818 300 103. It's Lindsay in for Will on this Tuesday morning, in for the rest of the week and next week too. So the sexiest men in Ireland. Okay, where's my piece? Ah, here it is. Yeah, because Chris Evans. Now, I'm not talking about the UK Chris Evans. I'm talking about the Captain America Chris Evans. He's been named as the world's sexiest man alive. Des Doyle is so sexy it should be him, says somebody. Okay, Des Doyle, an unnamed texter has sent that in. Dahi O'Shea is in the mix, as is our own Will Faulkner, and a few people you know, saying, yep, Will Faulkner is the one for me. But in the past, some who made it onto the list of the Irish sexiest men: Jamie Dornan, you remember him from 50 Shades. Colin Farrell, of course, as well. He was in there. Aidan Turner from Poldark. Oh, yes. Paul Galvin. Yeah, I can see why Paul Galvin would make it onto the list. Cillian Murphy as well. Liam Neeson. Ooh. Text or WhatsApp 083 3010103. Now, an additional needs class is due to open in Westmeath next week. It'll not open until after Christmas. Basically, 13-year-old Gareth Barr was expecting to start his secondary school journey last Monday, but has been told his additional needs class in Athlone Community College will not be ready until after next year. A class housed in the school's main building was due to move to a prefab so the additional needs class can be within the school, but a delay in delivering the prefab has actually had to, it's had to be put on the long finger. Michael Carrigy is the Fine Gael Senator and Chairman of the Oireachtas Committee on Autism. He joins me now. Michael, you're very welcome to the show. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Lindsay. Good morning to all your listeners.
Michael, yeah, there's, you know, I suppose the additional needs classes around the country, you know, things are just not moving fast enough for so many, many young people, like 13-year-old Gareth Barr, expecting to start secondary school. His journey was meant to commence on Monday. It's not going to happen now until next year, we've been told. What can you tell us about this?
Well, first of all, I think it's unacceptable. There was a strong campaign over a long number of months from, you know, a large number of parents within the Athlone area to get, an additional special class sanctioned in the area. And this has been on, to be honest, for a number of years. And it should never get to a situation where a parent doesn't know the following September where their child is going to go to school. And every child is entitled to go to school in their own community with their own siblings. And that wasn't the case until we got agreement from DTB with regard to Athlone Community College and then the sanction from the NCSE of a six-pupil class with, you know, the resources of 1.5 of a full teaching post and two SNAs. The six places, when that opened up, filled straight away. There was five children from within actually the school community, Athlone Community College, and another child, which was Gareth, were the six children that were to start in that. Now, yeah. I've been informed only recently that just two of the five children actually now meet the criteria for the special class within Athlone Community College of the five.
What is the criteria? What criteria are we talking about?
I don't take part in, or not privy to them assessments, but they, yeah, as I say, they, you know, feel if there's a certain level of a need, you know, if there's pupils with a higher need than others, and that they would prioritise then pupils for the class. But the reality is, we have a pupil and your name Gareth there that needs a place in school. He's getting home tuition at the minute. He was promised a place to start yesterday, mm-hmm, and now his situation where he doesn't know it. My understanding is that a one teacher post and a one SNA post have been filled within the school, and that they can cater for up to three students. It's when you have four students to six that the extra half teaching post and the extra SNA position comes into play. So the staffing is there at present for three kids. So I don't see the reason why, yeah, Gareth cannot take up that position within his own community college immediately. And I've been in contact with NCSE last week, and my understanding is that they now are going to meet with DTB in relation to this issue to have it rectified immediately.
Well, I mean, if the class is for six, only two out of the six are qualifying, which means if there is an SNA appointed there, and Gareth to actually go in there would be the third one, and there's three pupils to every SNA. It makes absolute common sense. I just do not understand what is happening here.
Neither do I. And I think it's not acceptable. And that's why I made contact with the NCSE, the CEO, and he has directed, and as I say, a meeting is going to take place this week in relation to it. It's not an acceptable situation where we have a young child with additional needs that has been promised a school place, as I say, which every child is entitled to. Every child is entitled to an education with their siblings and with their peers.
Yeah.
And we've had a situation, there are other families who accepted school places in schools far away, further away, distance, until we actually got the sanction of
putting young people and children in classes that are out of their jurisdiction or out of their area is no good to them, because they are going to, you know, interact with children that they will not have time to play with, that they probably won't have time to interact with out of school. And, you know, going forward in their life, I mean, you make your friends in school. A lot of your friends that you make throughout your life start in school. So it makes absolute common sense to put a child into their local school. So that's their local area, and they get to know all of the children around them, and especially children with special needs. Do you know what? Because they need such attention, and the attention to detail is so huge, that this is completely crazy why this class has been held, has been put off until the new year even. I mean, it's the 8th of November. What is the big holdup, especially when the SNA has been appointed there? Like, what is the special needs assistant going to actually do between now and the new year when she has no class to teach?
I think one of the issues is the issue of an additional modular building classroom for the school.
For three children? Do they need a whole building for three children?
I totally concur. I don't. If there is, the teaching positions have been put in place, if there is three children that are enrolled in the school at present with a need, it's quite a large school community. I don't see a reason why this cannot be put in place immediately. And I'm calling that decision is made, and that young Garrett is at school within the next week. I think that has to happen. It's not acceptable. And we need more schools to start thinking and stepping up to the plate and thinking positive. It can't be just a situation where a school is getting a new build, or whenever it might be getting a new build, that they automatically build an ASD class as part of that build.
Oh, it's typical. Do you know what? It's just typical of this country. Everything goes on the long finger, and then they have meetings about meetings, and, you know, at the end of the day, there's still no resolution, and this needs to be resolved before the end of the week, not by next year. Listen, good to talk to you, Michael. Thanks a million for joining us today on Midlands 103.
You're welcome. Thank
you. Take care. Bye-bye. Michael Carrigy, Fine Gael Senator from Longford, and he's the chairperson of the Oireachtas Committee on Autism. Right, it's time to join our gardener extraordinaire. He is in studio with me now, Arthur O'Mara from O'Mara Gardening Centre in Mullingar. Arthur,
Hi, very, very
welcome. How are
you? Hi all.
Isn't it so mild?
It's unreal, yes.
Do you know, I was saying when I came on air, I said we're still in double digits at the moment.
Still in double digits, November. And it actually get warmer later on in the week.
I know, it's crazy. And this is what COP27 is all about, the global warming, and it's happening in Egypt, Sharm el Sheikh.
Yeah, no, we're probably, in Ireland, so far we've been very lucky because, I mean, it hasn't affected us all that much.
Mm.
But in other countries, I know other people who are really suffering. Northern Italy, one of the biggest rivers in Europe, went dry this summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that kind of goes over your head and you say, oh yeah, a river went dry in Italy.
No, there's been quite a few amount of deaths
because of the heat. You know, I mean, in other countries, further afield, there's big problems. But in Europe, there is all the signs of problems. And if we don't do something about it, Dublin, Galway, Cork, Limerick will be underwater. Simple as.
It's crazy to think, but what can we do about it? There are little changes that everybody can make. And we think, even if it's a sustainable cup that you bring with you everywhere, and you think to yourself, that's not really going to do much difference. But it actually is.
But I mean, a whole lot of dots make a line, you know?
Yeah. When you think about it, you think, if I bring this cup with me everywhere and I'm getting a cup of coffee here and a cup of coffee there and a cup of coffee, another here and another there, you're not buying actual cups and throwing them away.
But there's an argument for that, which is important, that we all do our bit. But it's often the people who should make the bigger decisions hide behind that, and they go to the cup of coffee and they go to, you know, maybe garden lighting or running the hose or whatever it is, the small stuff. It's the big stuff. It's the really big stuff.
I'm going mad trying to save energy at home as well. Do you know, it just little
things. Yeah, but
it's
the big stuff. Remember, in this country, if you produce your own electricity, so you put up a wind turbine or put up whatever solar stuff on your roof, there is only one company who will actually compensate you for the electricity you use, even though it has been law, supposedly, in this country for quite a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So look, don't go there.
we could start a whole new
Yeah, the guys at the top need to get serious. And I mean, in Ireland and England,
the guys at the top are over in Egypt at the moment.
Yeah,
you know?
But they're sitting on very soft chairs, you know. So they need to get the finger out, you
Will
know.
Will we get down to the job in hand?
Yes, go back to our game. Yes, yes.
Okay, yes. So gardening. Do you know what I've noticed? And we are still hanging on a little bit there on the global warming. I have got summer flowers flowering in my garden again.
Now, yes.
I haven't pulled them out. They never died. They're starting to flower again. And shrubbing starting to flower again. Stuff that I wouldn't normally see.
Have, yes. I have begonias and they're actually starting to look better than they were a month ago. So it's crazy at
now,
the moment.
Now, the leaves are coming off the trees. Yes, all of that is happening.
Yeah,
everything like
yeah.
that is happening. In fact, I've got so many leaves over my grass in the back garden that I can't see the grass.
Yeah,
should I actually
that
leave that?
If you have a lot of... No, if there's a lot of leaves... Now, a little bit of leaf here and there is no harm. But if there's a lot of leaf that kind of... Especially underneath big trees.
Yeah.
If all those leaves stay on top of the grass, they can actually do harm, block out all the light. So it might be no harm to maybe if you have a blower. Now, if you have it's a lot of hard work if you have to do. The lawnmower. Chop them up with the lawnmower. Yeah. Give them a run with the lawnmower. But I find a garden blower very good that it keeps the place tidy and it's easy to do. If you have to rake them, it's tedious work. So give them a chop with the lawnmower.
And you know, somebody
least.
Said to me before, you should leave them there because the nutrients from the leaves would actually do.
Believe it or not, there's not a lot of nutrient in leaves and it can take them quite a while to break down. Now, if you put them into a pie with all other compost, they are beneficial, but I think they won't do your lawn any good.
Yeah they look messy anyway. They're going to be
whoever said that now just wants to avoid moving the leaves.
Okay, if you have any questions for Arthur or Mara, please get in touch with us. Text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103. Morning guys, I've found holes in my potatoes which contain wire like worms about half an inch long. I'm concerned I may have an infection. What do you reckon?
Now that is a very good question, and it's probably the time to deal with it is next March, April, when you're planting your potatoes. And that is not wireworm. It's a specific type of slug.
Oh.
Very, very small slug, less than a half inch long, and they bore into the potatoes. They may not be in the potatoes now. They may have left them. But they leave the residue they leave after them. Your potatoes, you can't eat them. They taste horrible.
Well, this person is saying they've found holes in the potatoes which contain wire-like worms.
Yeah, but
they're
probably sometimes they can
potatoes.
Be in it.
Yeah.
But sometimes you find potatoes and a little hole in a little round hole that you could maybe put the head of a biro into in about a half an inch. And that's done by that little slug. And the way to protect against it is try not to plant potatoes in the same place every year.
Okay.
Because you get a bit of rotation, that you don't get a build-up. A lot of rubble in your, around by the hedges and, you know, if you're doing a small vegetable area at home in the garden. Mm. And if there's a lot of kind of in beside ditches or beside shrubbery where the slugs can hide and get shelter, try and avoid that. But probably the easiest way to do it and the best way to do it is when you're planting your potatoes, just when you're putting them into the ridges, you put an organic slug tox. It's called Neurodof. And you put a little sprinkle of that all along with the potatoes into the ground.
Okay.
And then when you earth them up at a later stage, you know, later on in the season, around, I think around May time, you'd put some more soil around your potatoes, up around the stalks. You put on a little sprinkle at that stage as well. Not a whole pile, just a little sprinkle here and there. And that solves the problem.
Okay, so that'll just keep everything away and start up. You'll have those lovely homegrown potatoes.
Yes, nothing like a homegrown potato.
I'll tell you. Do you know, I grew up where my dad was such a gardener. Like he had beds of potatoes, beds of cabbages, beds
And we take that for granted.
Everything. Yeah. And I'm very lucky that I've inherited his green fingers.
Have you had green fingers? Good.
Anything I plant literally.
Well, you know what green fingers is? Practice.
Now, hi Arthur, what flowers can I pot to make a Christmas arrangement for a grave, says Jackie. Thank you for your text, Jackie.
Yeah, time of the year now that the summer colour will be gone or nearly gone, and you want a little bit of colour coming up to Christmas, and that will hopefully last right through the winter. So you've got to be careful what you use.
Mm-hmm.
If I start off by saying what not to use,
okay,
or what won't do very well, and you know all those lovely cyclamens that you see in the garden centres now, they don't really, because graveyards tend to be windswept, cold and wet, and that's exactly that what you don't want for cyclamen. They're fine around the house where they've got more shelter, or you have them in window boxes and you don't plant them too deep, and they're perfect, or under a canopy, even better again.
Yeah.
But for a graveyard, you want something hardier. I would use gimias, because they have a lovely berry and they will last all winter, and they're evergreen, and the either the flower or the berry will last right through until April, May, until you're doing your summer baskets. Galtieria is another little small plant that's quite low, that has a white flower, and it also has a berry and is evergreen and is easy to grow, and will last indefinitely. Winter flowering headers are great, because they give you a little bit of colour right through the winter. And if you get snow, as soon as the snow melts, up pop your headers again.
Yeah, the headers are great. I planted them last winter.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
And they're still there.
They're still there.
You know.
Yeah. Ivies, of course, are good, dripping down over a pot. They're easy to grow. And when you're putting indoor, and there's numerous other ones that you can use. There's all sorts of grasses that are getting very popular. There's hookera. Has all the different coloured foliage, can look very seasonal and very hardy. So if you did a nice mix with berries, polyanthus probably then coming up towards Christmas, you might pop in one or two for a little bit of extra colour. But when you're planting your shrubbery in the pots, now is the time to put in some bulbs. Put some dwarf tulips or dwarf daffodils or snowdrops into the pot, and they'll give you a spring surprise.
Snowdrops are probably my favourite flowers.
They're lovely to see them coming up after Christmas. Yes,
we are going to take a break. If you've any questions for Arthur, get in touch with us now. 083 30 10 103. We're back after this. It's Lindsay in for Will all this week and for some of next week too. It is our gardening slot with Arthur O'Mara from O'Mara Garden Centre in Mullingar. Arthur, do you know what? We were talking there off air about growing things, and I suppose I've got plants at home, and I was saying that my dad literally could grow anything. No matter what he touched, it literally took a life of its own, whereas I haven't grown vegetables in years. But when I moved into my house a couple of years ago, I got some potatoes. There were only little ones that were in the bottom of a bag. I threw them into the soil and we were eating them for Christmas.
Grow from a very small, and not a lot of work really. A little bit of work at the early stages to keep the weeds away from them, but
I didn't even do it. I put them into the soil and I walked away. I never
and you left them alone.
Them.
Oh, well, then you
and then when I saw the white flower, because I remember the white flower from when my dad was growing them when we were kids. I thought, oh God, there's the potatoes.
Yeah. They have quite a nice flower. And they're easy enough to grow, and it tastes so. I think that they taste better when you grow them yourself. You get the satisfaction that you've grown them.
Yeah, it's like making your own dinner rather than going out and, you know, it's just like, I did that.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, hi, can you still sow tulips and daffodils from a texter here?
The later you sow tulips, the better, and the earlier you sow daffodils. You're still plenty of time to sow daffodils, and you can sow, the best time to sow tulips is between the 1st of November and the 1st of January.
I must
right up to Christmas.
Put some in because
you
I
can sow tulips right up to Christmas.
Right, okay.
But just make sure you put them down deep enough, and that will encourage them to come back next year. If you only put them down 2 or 3 inches, the bulbs don't over summer, we'll call it. Not over winter, over summer. Whereas you put them, because the ground gets a little bit damp on the top. Whereas you put them down 6 inches, it's kind of reverse in your mind. But the deeper you put them, the better they'll be and the drier they'll be.
Okay.
So down about 6 to 7 inches, 2 or 3 inches apart, and then they will come back every year.
Do bulbs actually die in the ground? Because I've been planting daffodil. Now, here's your one saying that anything I plant grows. I've been planting daffodil bulbs for years, and some of them just never came back. Some of them just disappeared on me, and I thought, where did they go? Like,
do you? Well, there's a number of reasons. Is the soil damp? No.
No.
No, because daffodils don't like particularly damp. Heavy, cloggy soil.
They just disappeared.
Do you run the lawnmower over them when they're finished flowering?
Probably.
Aye, that could be the reason. When you plant them the first year, and it takes a daffodil 5 years to make up a new... You know when you plant a potato?
Yeah.
The potato you plant decays and all the baby ones grow. With daffodils, it takes longer. You start at the first year, there'll be a small bulb. The second year, they get bigger and bigger, so that the bulb develops.
Sometimes when
you buy daffodils, sometimes they're more expensive than others, and the reason being the size of the bulb, because they take a year longer to grow. So always plant big bulbs. There's more energy in them.
Okay.
And then, but if when you plant out your bulbs, and then you, when they finish flower, they don't look all that nice, and you run the lawnmower over them, you actually weaken the bulbs.
Okay.
And if you continue to do that, you kill them out.
So that's what's happened. Okay. I have a number of camilla in pots at the moment. There's a large amount of fruit on the branches ready to bloom. Will the... Let me just make this one a bit bigger. I can't, because I can't actually see the full text. I can't. There's a large amount of fruit on the branches ready to bloom. Will they bloom during the winter?
No, they're camellias, and they will have made their buds, because they flower probably in, depending on what part of the country you're in. They flower anytime from February onwards, depending on how warm. If you're down in Cork or you're in Dublin, they'll flower that bit earlier. They can flower in early February. In the Midlands here, it's a little bit colder, so they can be into the end of March, April. And again, it'll depend a little bit on the variety. But all of them will have made their flower buds over the summer.
Right.
They start to make their flower buds from July onwards. And that's why it's important if you're growing camellias, In containers especially, that you don't let them dry out during the summer when they're in their rest period, because they're not really fully rested. They're developing the flower buds.
Mm-hmm.
So you give them a feed in late summer, or early summer, should I say, and make sure you don't let them dry out. And they produce all those big buds, and you think they're going to flower now, but they won't. They will keep those buds until next season, and then flower.
Right, okay. Arthur, I have a very old box hedge that's getting killed by ivy. I've tried to pull it out, can't get it. Is there any liquid I could put to omit to kill the ivy?
No.
I have an awful problem with ivy.
And it has become more prevalent over the last number of years. It tends to be taken over everywhere.
Mm.
It's very difficult to get rid of it. And there is no spray that you can spray on to the host plant, if you have ivy grown up through a tree.
Mm.
Now, there are sprays you can get for ivy, but they are toxic. And I mean toxic. So I wouldn't even like using them.
Right, okay.
You know, because we've got to stop doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I would live with ivy before I would spray it.
Just keep cutting it back.
Just keep cutting it back and pulling it, which is a tedious job, especially with box hedging, because they will smother it on you. So really there's no easy answer to that one. It's physical.
And you know, if you're out walking in forests and you see the trees and you can see the ivy creeping up them.
Oh yeah, they will. And it can actually knock trees, because it stops it acts like a parachute in a sail in the wintertime.
A certain
amount of it is good, because the birds love it, because they live in it in the winter. So it's a balance.
Okay, how do I take hardwood cuttings on blueberries, says this texter?
You take the current season's growth, you cut off the very soft stuff on the top couple of inches, put a bit of rooting powder on it, and put it into soil outside. Don't put them inside. Okay. Put them outside in a reasonably sheltered spot. Maybe put a little bit of rooting powder on them and push the cuttings down into the ground about 2 to 3 inches. And when you're taking the cuttings, don't put your fingers anywhere near the cut surface or you'll seal it with a kind of a wax on that's on your hands
right.
And then it won't root.
Okay. Can you ask Arthur for the name of a good fertiliser for apple trees and when I can prune them? As I did not have an apple on them for the last 2 years or so.
Mm, yeah. High potash feed is most important for apple trees. It's important not to give them too much nitrogen. So a fertilizer, it's basically potash is what you want to put on because they'll grow enough, they'll get enough nitrogen to grow.
Mm.
It's the potash which encourages fruit and flower, and that's what you want. So potash, usually put on August, but if you put it on any time, it stays in the ground, so it's always beneficial. But it takes it a while to be, it's a long-term, slow process. So whatever fertilizer you use this year, you get the benefit next year.
Okay.
So it's not a quick return. But high potash is crucial. Keep the grass well away from the trees, out as far as the fall of the branches.
Yeah.
You know, 6 or 7 inches around the base of the tree isn't really adequate. You want to keep the, because grass takes all the nutrient. So try and do that now if you can, so that when they get into spring, you have no competition from the grass. And pruning is done between the end of November and the middle of March.
Okay, okay. Good stuff. Lawn full of moss, would garden lime help? Says Chris.
Garden lime, of course. It's part A of what you need to do. Treating moss on your lawn properly is done in two stages. You put on some garden lime first and then a couple of weeks later you use, it's actually a fertiliser that's organic and it's called Osmo, moss remover.
Mm-hmm.
You put on the lime, you wait for a couple of weeks for that to work and then you put on the Osmo moss remover.
Okay, I'm writing this down as I'm speaking to you because I'm looking at my, I'm picturing my back garden
and I'm thinking of my front garden.
And both of them are, there's an awful lot of moss and somebody had said to me in the past, you can if you break the moss up.
It helps to give it a good raking out. If you have a small area that you can actually get stuck into it with a rake and rake it out.
Yeah.
Now, you can get scarifiers. And you could probably still do it. It's getting a little bit late. It's like a lawnmower, but instead of cutting the grass, it has a little spikes on it and it digs up all the moss.
I know exactly
what you mean. That aerates the ground and takes out all that old grass and takes out the moss. The lawn will look a bit rough after you do it, but it recovers 100%.
So
also helps put on the lime, leave it for 10 days to 2 weeks and then put on the moss remover. Probably a little bit late for this year, although with the weather we're having it's perfect. But normally I would tell people do it in spring.
Okay, Arthur, thank you so much for joining us in studio today and we will talk to you again next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, that is Arthur O'Mara, O'Mara Garden Centre in Mullingar. It's Lindsay in for Will all this week. You can text or WhatsApp us on 083 3010 103 or give us a call on 0818 300 103. Coming up in this hour, any questions we didn't get to with Arthur about the gardening, we'll pop them into next week. Okay, so coming up in this hour, we've still got loads and loads to keep you interested and lots of interesting stories too, as you can hear me flicking through the papers. Owen Dalton, the journalist at thejournal.ie, is going to be chatting to me because local authorities have been hiring private farm inspectors to help tackle population in at-risk areas. We're going to find out a bit more about that. Antoinette Byrne is going to be talking to us because Gardaí are investigating the theft of 2 defibrillators from football clubs. She's the PRO at St. Joseph's GAA in Ballyadams. And of course, if there's anything you want to add, text or WhatsApp 083 3010 103. But Frank Rainey, our courts correspondent, joins me on the line now. Frank, you're very welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm good, Lindsay. Good morning to you and your listeners.
Good morning to you. Now, Enoch Burke is asking the High Court for a stay on the full hearing of legal action taken against him by his school. He has requested a stay be placed on the hearing of the High Court action, which he claims to be an abomination of our laws and constitution. The teacher from Castlebar in County Mayo has been in prison since early September for breaching a court order to stay away from the school where he works. He was suspended on full pay from Wilson School in County Westmeath, which is, I think it's actually just outside Mullingar, pending the outcome of an investigation into alleged misconduct arising from his refusal to address a gender transitioning student by another name. He was later jailed for contempt for breaching a court order to stay away from the school until the process is complete. Frank, what's happening with him now?
Well, as you say, he is looking to have a stay placed on a legal action taken by the school, Wilson's Hospital School in County Westmeath, and he wants it postponed until his appeal against certain court orders made by the High Court granted to the school have been dealt with. He was in the court a few weeks ago. There were spectacular scenes in court. I'm sure you and your listeners remember them well, when both he and his mother were removed from the courtroom at one point. They were seeking an early hearing date for this appeal, and the court was unable to give them a date any sooner than the 16th of February. So yesterday he was applying to have, and this is a separate legal challenge that's been taken by the school, and he was applying to have that postponed. The school was contesting the application yesterday. They wanted it dealt with as soon as possible. There was no judgment yesterday, as it turns out. The judge does want to take some time to consider the submissions made yesterday. And Enoch Burke made submissions on his behalf. It took him the best part of an hour to do so, and the judge listened intently to what he was saying. He has been in jail since the 5th of September, and that is for breaching a court order directing him not to go near the school or attempt to teach at the school until this disciplinary process is complete. He was suspended on the 24th of August, and that, as you say, was in relation to his a refusal to address a transitioning student with the pronoun they. He's an evangelical Christian, and he claims he couldn't comply with that because of his religious beliefs. He refuses to purge his contempt. He was taken into custody because of the breach of that court order. And he has been told on a number of occasions that he can purge his contempt. He can walk out of court if he simply makes an undertaking to stay away from the school as directed by that court order. And he says he can't. Again, because of his religious beliefs and his conscience, he said he can't purge that contempt. Now, in his submissions yesterday, he'd made reference to previous court hearings. He claimed a judge told him that his case isn't about transgenderism, and that another judge said that his suspension wasn't an attack on his religious beliefs. And he said yesterday that they were wrong about that. He said that 99.99% of people, when asked what the case is about, would say that it's about transgenderism. He accused judges of not upholding the Irish Constitution, as is their duty. He made that claim with the Irish Constitution in his right hand. He accused the judges of opening the gates and letting religious beliefs become lost. He described their rulings as shameful and unlawful, and he said prejudice against religious beliefs, in his words, was being normalised. As I said, he spent about an hour on his feet, and the judge listened to what he had to say, but while the other side was given an opportunity to speak, and their submissions were a lot shorter than Mr. Burke's, a decision wasn't made, and we weren't given a precise date as to when that judgment will be made, but we will certainly keep a very close eye on it. And he will find out, you'd imagine, in the next few weeks whether or not the judge is going to grant him that application for a postponement.
Yeah, I mean, he's accused judges of enabling what he describes as an unfair and unlawful treatment of him by the school, and he's likened the Irish Constitution to the USSR, North Korea, or even China when it comes to religious liberty. Do you think that people are being a bit too hard on him, Frank? Or, I mean, the law is the law, and we know that, and we all have to stand by the law, but do you actually think people are being a bit judgmental of him?
I think it's a really good question, Lindsay, and ultimately it would be up to the courts to decide on the merits of this case. But the one thing that you absolutely can't deny in relation to Enoch Burke is that he does have a right to bring this case. He does have a right to vindicate his rights under the Irish Constitution if he feels that he has been denied them. And again, let's not prejudge the outcome of these proceedings. And I know there are several, it's hard to keep up with them, there are several proceedings going on in the background at the moment. But he is entitled to bring this case. But certainly some of the language that he has used in the court hearings that I have sat in on, and the way he's gone about it, and he's a very impressive lay litigant, I must say. He spent an hour on his feet yesterday making his submissions. But some of the language that you've referenced there is wholly inappropriate. And the judge did say that yesterday. You know, Mr. Justice Brian O'Moore waited patiently for him to deliver his submissions. He interjected a couple of times just to ask him questions to, I suppose, tease out some of his arguments a little bit more. But he did allow him to make his submissions. He didn't necessarily agree with an awful lot of what he was saying. And he made the point at the end that he did pull him up on what he described as strident language that was used in his submissions and scurrilous allegations in relation to four fellow members of the bench, four High Court judges, that he had made what Mr. Justice O'Moore described yesterday as scurrilous allegations. You know, there were accusations of stitch-ups, of cover-ups. You know, as you mentioned, he likened the Irish courts to those found in strict regimes like the former USSR, North Korea and China, and the judge described the language used as entirely inappropriate. But that all said, you know, he does have a case. He is presenting his case, and it will ultimately be up for, in this instance, Mr. Justice O'Moore to decide on the merits of it. He will obviously hear submissions because it is an application that has been contested by the other side. And the appeal will then take place before another court in this building where I'm speaking to you from today, the Criminal Courts of Justice, albeit it is a civil appeal that he is bringing, and that has been penciled in for the 16th of February. But while that strident language, again, the judge's words, not mine, was used yesterday, it definitely wasn't. We didn't have the same spectacular scenes that we saw in the Court of Appeal a few weeks ago where, as I said, two people were removed from the courtroom. Indeed, Enoch Burke was removed twice. He was allowed back in. But on that occasion, again, there were, you know, accusations being levelled at the court, and the judge did have to rise for a time. It didn't reach that level yesterday. But I suppose, just contrary to the point that Mr. Burke was making, that he was being denied an opportunity and he was being denied his rights and his legal rights before the courts, you know, the judge did say, look, I've sat here patiently and I've listened to your submissions. I don't agree with some of the language that you have used, but I am listening to your case and we are moving it on, and he will make a decision in due course, taking everything that he said into account and also taking the other arguments into account as well. The barrister representing Wilson's Hospital School is objecting, and they are eager to proceed with this and to get this dealt with as soon as possible.
I'd well believe they are. Frank, thanks a million for joining us today.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Take care. That is Frank Graney, our courts correspondent, speaking to us about that legal action being taken against Enoch Burke. OK, welcome back into the show. Now, Gardaí and Laois have recovered the two defibrillators that were stolen from the GAA clubs. The life-saving devices were taken from St. Joseph's GAA Club in Ballyadams and Castle Michael GAA Club in Kildare. A number of other items were discovered during the course of the investigation by Portlaoise Community Policing Unit. And do you know, to take defibrillators is a crazy thing to do, because you are literally messing up with your, it's about life or death. And to take these away could actually be taking someone's life away as well. Antoinette Brennan is the PRO of St. Joseph's GAA in Ballyadams. A very good morning to you, Antoinette. Now, I know that these defibrillators have been recovered, but they should never have been taken in the first place.
Good morning. How are you? Thanks very much for taking my call.
Not at all.
As you say, thanks thanks to the good work of the Gardaí in Portlaoise, the defibrillators were recovered. I must actually say to you, they recovered four defibrillators, and they were all from, as you say, one was ours, one was Castle Mitchell, and the other two were actually from two neighbouring clubs as well.
Wow.
So there was four taken within a radius of possibly about 15 miles. You did allude to the fact there that these are, you know, they are life-saving devices. So I suppose we were very lucky in a sense that our under-20s were playing a home game in the Championship on Friday night. Now, they did train on Wednesday night, but at that stage there was no evidence of anything. Now, nobody, I have to say, we were unsure if they were taken before then, but as far as we know, they were there on Wednesday night. But on Friday night, when we turned up for the game, it was discovered then that the defibrillator was actually taken, the box was tampered with and the defibrillator was missing. So we immediately rang the guards, and in fairness, they were out within, I think they were out within the hour. We also took to our social media platforms to alert the whereabouts of the defibrillators, and hence the reason then we heard from Castle Mitchell that they had been, they were in the same predicament as ourselves. So I suppose, you know, we were very fortunate in the sense that we had a home game, because it's not something, you know, with clubs winding down now for you know, the seasons are almost over, you know, and these premises are not, they're not utilised now every night of the week as they would have been maybe during the summer months. We were very fortunate that we were there Friday night to discover this. It could have went on for weeks otherwise, and God forbid if it was needed, then we would have discovered we didn't have it.
I don't understand why anyone would actually take them, because they're no good to anyone else unless you're stealing them for another club, and another club is never going to do something like that.
No, it's beggar's belief, to be honest with you. And you know, as you said there, you know, these are life, they're life-saving devices. But, you know, they're serial numbers on them, they're traced, and I suppose that was the good thing about them, you know, the serial numbers on them, they're traceable, they're, regardless whether it's a club or a community or whatever, you know, there's traceability on those defibrillators. So it's just beyond me to know why they were taken. And I don't know whether people realise what they're doing when they are taking such valuable property.
Yeah, because you know, with the fact that they're so traceable, I mean, you can't exactly sell them on, you know, and it's craziness why somebody would actually take them. Like, what good are they actually going to be to anybody else? I mean, these devices are there to save lives, and they have saved many lives over since their conception and since the fact that they've been put into place, because we heard of so many tragic accidents that have happened over the years with young lives. And, you know, the defibrillators, had they not been there, oh my God, the situation could have been so much worse. So it must be a relief to you, Antoinette.
We were extremely relieved, but you know, it's daunting at the same time. You know, thanks be to God, like we have ours in place now for 6 years. We put it in 2016, and you know, we're a very small rural club, so you know, you're fundraising for this, that and the other. But it was a thing that we made, you know, when the defibrillators became available, it was a priority on our behalf to provide it, not just to the football club itself, but we're very rural. We don't have a central point of a filling station or a shop or whatever. So we made it accessible to the greater community, as indeed did we to the HSE and to the Gardaí. We're on their database. So it's not just for the community. We're on their database, you know. And I spoke to the guard yesterday in Portlaoise, and she said, yes, we would often click in and look to see where the nearest defib is to go move. So it's actually quite worrying to think we have it back, but it's not in place yet. So please God, as I say, we've never had to use it in the 6 years, but at the minute it's still not in operation. So until such time as we get it checked out, we have to get a new box. We have, you know, it's all those little things to get it back in place. You know, we won't rest easy until such time as that's done, and that will be at a cost to the club as well.
Absolutely. Well, listen, thank you for your time today, and I'm glad that all's well that ends well so far. And
I suppose I would like to just make one point, I suppose, in relation to it. As I say, we were lucky. You know, I don't know whether this is a trend going forward or what the story is, but I would, I suppose, appeal to other clubs and even community centres and different things that are not being used every night to be vigilant now in their area. Ours was at the back of our premises for that reason, so they would have had to come in on site, and it wasn't an opportunist passing by the road to say, oh, there's a deep fib, let's go in and take it. So it was either scouted out or they did come in around to look for it. So I suppose just for other clubs and communities, now that there's not everyday activities, to just be vigilant and go and check on their devices and make sure that they are in place, that somebody else doesn't. And, you know, again, as I say, once we hit the social media platform the other night, I think we did alert the other three clubs in the area to go check theirs, and as I say, four in our area on Friday night.
And tell me, before I let you go, do you actually have to buy these defibrillators, or are they handed over to you, or do you have to fundraise for them, or you know, are you covered by insurance if they go missing? What way is it working?
Most people will buy them, whether they be communities or GAA clubs or whatever else. You know, we're a GAA club, so we don't have much in our community as such. We're very rural, so yeah, we would have provided the defibrillator, as I say, for the greater community. I'm not 100% sure yet in relation to the terms of the insurance in relation to getting boxes and that. You can't lock gates, because then you're not letting it be accessible. You have to, you know, there's no point in locking it inside in a room or in a lock-up store. It's no good to anything. It has to be immediately accessible. So those things will have to be just checked out. And I suppose for us, regardless of what way that's going to work, we just want to get it back up now and hopefully have it in place in case it is needed.
Absolutely. Well, listen, thanks, yeah. Antoinette. Thanks a million for talking to me this morning.
Yeah, and I would like to say just thanks to the guards for their prompt help on this, and also to the greater community, and I suppose the power of social media, and indeed yourselves for highlighting this very important case.
My absolute pleasure. Take care. Enjoy your day.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. That is Antoinette Brennan, the PRO at St. Joseph's GAA Ballyadams. And good news insofar as that the defibrillators that were stolen have been recovered. And in fact, four were recovered rather than the two that were stolen. The Gardaí actually recovered four of them. If there's something you want to get off your chest, well, we'd love to hear from you. Text or WhatsApp 083 3010. Okay, if you've got a bit of a sweet tooth now, we've got a competition for you. Head over to Midlands 103 Facebook or even Instagram pages, where, with thanks to the great team at Sugar Plum Sweetery, you could be the winner of a €100 gift voucher or one of our three runner-ups that will take you home. Three runner-ups that will take home a brand new toy treat box, a toy show treat box. All you have to do is head over to our socials for your chance to win. And I wish you all the very, very best of luck. Now, the actor Chris Evans, as I said earlier on, he has been named as the People's Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive. Chloe, what do you reckon?
I think it could have gone differently, to be honest.
You're with me on this. We're singing off the same hymn sheet here. Somebody actually texted in and said, Stephen Nolan. Now, if you don't know who Stephen Nolan is, Stephen Nolan must be the sexiest man. Who wants a skeleton? There's no better way of spending a Wednesday night than watching a show on BBC. Oh, Janice. Really? Do you know who Stephen Nolan is?
I wouldn't know him, no, but...
Google him, right? I wouldn't exactly... Now, I like Stephen Nolan. I do like him. He's a brilliant presenter. Unbelievably good. But Ireland's sexiest man. So who would you have on your list?
In America, I'd be... Well, he's English, so not really America. But Tom Holland would definitely be one for me. Mm. But Ireland, I think Niall Horan would have a good chance.
Yeah, Niall Horan, Mullingar Bachelor. You know, he's taken the cap from Joe Dolan as the Mullingar Bachelor. Me, Aidan Turner, Poldark. Oh, yes, he is. He's got it going on. Colin Farrell from maybe a few years ago, I think, although he's very topical at the moment as well with the Banshees of where is it in a Sheen or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, no, I it's hard to know. Like if anyone has their idea of who Ireland's sexiest man is, 083 3010 103. So we're singing off the same hymn sheet, Chloe, when we say Chris Evans. No,
it wouldn't be my cup of tea now, to be honest, but fair play to him. He said his mother would be delighted, so I can imagine the bragging that
wouldn't
would be going
any
on.
Any mother say that about their son now, in fairness? Like, if you're a mum and you have a son and you think, oh, gotcha, isn't he gorgeous? Like,
but for a mother to actually be able to say, no, he's won an award for this.
Yeah, yeah. What about, are you watching I'm a Celeb?
Yes.
Okay, what
Keeping
do you
up
think?
With that. I think it's good. Yeah, I was a bit disappointed that Olivia went. Mm. You know, from the first episode, I was thinking she had potential.
I thought she would actually go the distance. I thought she would go the whole way because I thought she'd make brilliant TV. She's actually been at the producers of, well, her people have been talking to their people for years and years to get her on the show. 24 hours in and she's gone.
Yeah, it just seems weird. And even on last night's episode, nothing was said about what happened. So
some of them are saying that it could be a COVID thing, that's why she's not gone back in. But her Instagram and her fiance are saying the real truth will come out. What real truth? Like, well, come on, cloak and dagger stuff.
The suspense with it is crazy.
And then the former health secretary of the UK, Matt Hancock, is heading in there tonight as well. And well, they're speeding up him going in because there's a bit of a gap. What do you think of the whole cast that's there at the moment?
I think it's a good cast, to be honest. I feel like there is potential for maybe a couple of arguments, which there hasn't been too many, but
Boy George last night when he was saying, I'm not going to poke my nose in here with the cooking. I was thinking, ooh, get in there.
I was the exact same. I was like, oh, it's already starting. Yeah. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, Mike Tyndall, I think, he was rapping last night. I thought he was brilliant.
I think he's going to be really good now. I'd love to see him doing a couple of trials because I feel like he's just going to be so strong in them.
Yeah, yeah. So what would you like to see happen? Who do you think is going to be in tonight's trial?
I'm not sure. I would like to just see the celebrities really get scared.
Yeah, well, I think because Boy George is a vegan, right? I think the public are going to be voting him into everything at the moment, and especially the Bush Tucker trials when it comes to the eating part. And then when Matt Hancock goes in, the public are going to be throwing him into everything just to make him suffer.
Because you want the people that aren't going to be as good at the trials. You want the ones with good watching.
Yeah.
I think the ones that would be screaming more, afraid of everything, would be much better.
Okay. Who do you think is going to win it? Or do you think the winner is even in there yet?
I feel like Mike Tyndall, he has a very good chance.
Yeah. I would have loved to have seen Olivia stay in there. I mean, I'd say her nails will last. Did you see her nails when she went in at first?
Like, yes. She's
beautiful. I thought the nails are probably lasting longer than she did in her time in the
Maybe that's the reason. Maybe she wanted to save them.
Chloe, good to have you in studio with us. I'm sure we'll talk again later on in the week. So Ireland's most sexiest man, you have your vote now on 083 30 10 103. Do you know, I was listening to that song with the earphones on, turned up quite loud, and I could hear the bass because we did a story earlier on saying new research shows that more bass in music really does encourage people to dance more. Neuroscientists in Canada found that those attending gigs move more to very low frequencies, even though they're not consciously detectable. And I was like having a little disco here in the studio going, oh yeah, I love that song. But it was because it was turned up loud and I could hear that bass kicking in. Now, have you got an opinion on the stories affecting the Midlands or on the national and international news stories of the week? Well, Midlands Today wants to hear from you. Every Friday morning, local voices have their say on the stories of the week on the Friday panel. You can sign up to the panel now and have your say while promoting your business, your club or your community group. And you can take part by phone, Zoom or the best way, the absolute best way, you can come into the studio and we can have some fun. Find Midlands 103 on Facebook and you can send a message there, or you can phone us on 057-9317. Let me give you that number again. I was doing so well, it all fell apart. 057-9317-197. And we'd love to see you in studio. Still to come, we're going to be talking to Owen Dalton, who's a journalist at thejournal.ie, because local authorities have been hiring private farm inspectors to help tackle pollution in at-risk areas, and Owen is going to keep us up to date on that. Okay, so local authorities have been hiring private farm inspectors to help tackle pollution in at-risk areas. Funding was announced earlier this year to resource work targeted at water quality pressures as described by the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage. Some councils have started hiring and targeting various areas, with Laois County Council being the latest to tender for the role. A journalist with the journal.ie is Owen Dalton. Owen, you're very welcome to the programme. A very good morning to you. How are you, Owen?
Morning, Lindsay. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you with us. Now, talk to me about this story. So private farming inspectors have been hired to tackle the pollution in at-risk areas. Can you expand on this for me?
Yeah, that's right. So there has been, I suppose, increasing pressure coming in this area from the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and other bodies trying to get to grips with water quality issues. So a report that we would have reported on in the journal just last month would have highlighted from the EPA how farming was playing a significant role in the declining water quality in some regions, and this would be due to nitrogen emissions from various agricultural activities. Sometimes this can be especially linked to dairy farming, which can be quite intensive. And so there has been this interim measure to allow and to fund the hiring of these farm inspectors, and a few councils have started tendering for it. As you said, the Laois County Council, of course, is the latest. Donegal County Council is another. And I understand another couple of councils are due to start hiring in the coming weeks also. And I suppose part of the targets nationally that the likes of the EPA have wanted is, and as well as that the Department of Housing, is to increase the rate of inspection of farms from 5% to 10% each year. And I was speaking to Laois County Council about this, and it explained essentially how these roles would work, and that they will be forming a panel of suitably qualified consultants to carry out farm inspections if needed. These consultants will only be basically examining the farms, and they will report back to the Environment Office of Laois County Council. And because they are outsourced contractors, they will have no role in any enforcement actions. So that will still be the County Council's responsibility.
Yeah. So what exactly are they going to be looking for, Owen?
Yeah, so it depends on, I guess, each council, what it would like to do. If we're looking at, say, Donegal County Council, it specified a number of items in its tender that it put out a few weeks back. And there it said it will focus primarily on farmyards and will concern slurry storage, silage pits, manure pits, and trying to minimise soiled water, and that it will be drawing up a weekly programme of inspections in a number of at-risk catchments, and these will be completed by the contract staff using an inspection template. And Donegal County Council, which I think we can take this will apply to a lot of councils, said the farms that will be inspected will include the full range of farm types, from dairy to sheep and mixed farms. And I suppose it's coming with that backdrop of, particularly with that EPA report, which is only the latest in a number that's looking at the water quality in our regions around the country. And it would have found particularly kind of the likes of the southeast and the south of the country would have been particularly suffering from poor water quality, which it attributed to agricultural related activities. And if we look at, say, I believe it was just a couple of months back, the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, said his own department was working with local authorities and the EPA, because local authorities here are, they are the enforcement body. He wants to develop, the Minister, a strengthened, risk-based, local authority-led national agricultural inspection programme. So in the meantime, he has provided funding for these inspector roles. Basically, these are enhanced measures, as he described them, and the wider program, this National Agricultural Inspection Program, will be detailed in the coming weeks, it is expected.
Okay, well, so these farm inspectors, do they have to make an appointment with the farmer, or do they literally just turn up? You know, what way will it actually work?
My own understanding is they do have to make appointments, that they can't just turn up. That's my understanding of it to this point. From speaking to Laois County Council, and that these inspections are being, I suppose, completed using a preset inspection template and recorded in electronic format. And likely where you could probably expect them to focus on is areas that have been flagged by EPA itself as where perhaps water quality is that bit, essentially that bit poor. that is expected where they'll be focusing. And likely, I suppose, look, as with any county council, if people contact the county council and they have concerns about the water in their area or whichever, then, you know, you can expect perhaps some of these inspectors will be put towards farms and the like in that area.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand completely. Go on, carry on.
Yeah, no, like, you can see, I suppose, how, I mean, from the EPA side, they seem to be coming under increasing pressure to try to, I suppose, better the enforcement in this area, and therefore so are the local authorities coming under pressure. From the other side, and I would have spoken to farmers about this, you know, they're obviously, this is an uncomfortable position to be in also.
Indeed it is, and when you see how the agency kind of highlighted that how farming was playing a significant role in the declining water quality in some regions due to the, as you said, the nitrogen emissions from agricultural activities, you know, we kind of need this to be sorted out sooner rather than later, don't we?
Yeah, exactly, and I suppose the reports from the EPA they're only maybe getting stronger in their language. They put out two reports, I believe, in the last 2-3 months that were very strong on this issue in particular. And I mean, look, there will still be critics that would say, look, the enforcement in that is not strong enough. And I would have detailed in the piece that, you know, the measures can just range from verbal instruction from the local authority to the farmer. Or perhaps it might be somewhat stronger. It might be a written notice under the Local Government Water Pollution Act to basically try to enforce works to be carried out on that farm to control pollution. In other cases, individual farmers may be reported to the Department of Agriculture. So it does vary. And I suppose from the farmer's point of view, I know one farmer I was speaking to, like, he would make the point that they would have been encouraged for various practices. That kind of intensification that perhaps is also partly causing some of the water quality issues. So it's not something that's going to be necessarily changed overnight, but it's an interesting development at the same time ahead of this National Agricultural Inspection Programme.
Okay. Owen, good to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us today. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Take care. That is Owen Dalton with the journal.ie speaking to us about the private farm inspectors there. Okay, today is National Cappuccino Day. If you are looking to have a cappuccino, enjoy it. Half the world is celebrating with you. The very first cappuccino is said to have been made by an Italian monk back in 1683 after the Battle of Vienna. However, it never appeared on a cafe menu until the 1930s. Today's show produced by Sinead Hubble. Researched by Chloe Farrell. I'm Lindsay Dolan, back with you tomorrow. Carl's on the way after the news. Have a great day.